Welcome to a special Independence Day edition of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com, a special bonus show here for Wednesday, July 4th, 2012. I am the Solomonster. I know I said I wasn't going to do another show before I leave for Vegas this week, but hey, I figured what the hell. We had Raw Monday night, special live edition of SmackDown, Super SmackDown, in fact, Great American Bash edition last night on Sci-Fi, so I figured let me chime in here with a special bonus show, give some thoughts on that. And dive into a couple of other news bits here. Hope everybody is having a very good holiday and barbecuing and, of course, all the fireworks coming up a little bit later on. Don't blow any limbs off, please. Do not blow any fingers, toes, arms, eyeballs out, anything like that. That would be very bad. So just be careful and be safe as you enjoy this holiday. Let's get into Raw here. Just talk a little bit about the show on Monday night while it is fresh on my mind. Of course, Raw this past Monday night was from Laredo, Texas, one of the few two-hour editions of Raw left here before they go 3 hours in a couple of weeks. This was the AJ Lee show. If you don't like the girl or you're not a fan of this storyline involving her and Punk and Brian, then there probably wasn't much about the show that you liked. But I happen to like AJ, and I think she's the most compelling character in WWE right now. So, in fact, I thought her best acting so far came during a backstage segment on this very show after her match. She confronted CM Punk backstage to see what he thought of her match, and he basically blew her off and said that he didn't see it. And I just thought that her acting here and everything was just really well done. What I'm not a fan of when it comes to her character is the fact that she keeps fucking up some really good matches. You know, just when the main event on this show was getting good, her music plays, and I just got all sad. But I thought the payoff at the end was interesting. You know, where AJ drags out a table and basically threatens to commit, I guess, what would be wrestling suicide on this show, perhaps. Teasing that she would dive through the table herself, and Daniel Bryan told her to stop, and CM Punk tried to save her, and she kissed him. I mean, we'll get into all that, but I thought that, you know, they've done a very good job of muddying the waters enough to where you really don't know what she's going to do at the pay-per-view. Remember, AJ's going to be the special referee for the WWE Championship match between CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, and a lot of people speculating that she'll side with Bryan, and this whole thing was just an act all along to get the title back on him, which, you know, at this point, being that Bryan's already had at least one title match, I'm not really sure what sense that makes. I'm not saying she can't turn on Punk, but I don't know that this has been a ruse all along with her and Bryan. So they've done a very good job of basically clouding everything to where we don't really know one way or the other what direction she may go in that match, and you know, we'll see what happens at Money in the Bank, of course. But I said before, I don't see her siding with Brian. I don't see her siding with Punk either, quite frankly. Someone suggested to me on Twitter a couple weeks back that AJ be linked with a debuting Dean Ambrose, you know, as some sort of psycho combination, and I think that would be a fantastic way to introduce a new character, whether it's Ambrose or anybody else, quite frankly. I think that's actually a very good idea. It's not as though Brian or Punk need AJ. They've got something with her now, and to be able to use her to give somebody else the rub, which is kind of what happened, if you think about it, with Edge and Lita back in the day. Lita was a big part of Edge's act that helped get him over as a singles heel about 6-7 years ago now, whatever it was. And you know, they did that with Jamie Noble and Nydia many years ago when he attacked Hurricane and debuted as Nydia's new boyfriend on SmackDown. Now, obviously, that was a mid-card act, and I think this could be a main event storyline, but whether it's Ambrose or you have, you know, Dolph Ziggler dump Vicky Guerrero at some point and somehow end up with AJ, you know, maybe something happens at the pay-per-view and she's all distraught and he tries to console her backstage or something like that. Whatever the case, I think that there is great potential to use AJ to better somebody else's career, because she is all over the shows. She's on Raw, she's on SmackDown. It's kind of AJ overload right now, but she's making the most of it, and it, again, I still think it's an intriguing character, and they hopefully will have a good payoff for it in the end. Let's talk about some of the segments on the show here. Of course, the show started out, bunch of people out there for a promo. We've seen this kind of segment on Raw time and time again. All the participants in the Raw Money in the Bank match and the WWE Championship match, they each came out, they said something, you know, they cracked some jokes. Chris Jericho is actually kind of funny here. And in the end, Big Show was the only one left standing, and that's it. There really wasn't much else to it, quite frankly. They had a match. It was Santino, Christian, R-Truth, and Kofi Kingston. beating David Otunga, Cody Rhodes, and the Primetime Players. Really cool to see the Primetime Players get some Primetime TV time on Raw. In fact, I think they came out to their own entrance music here, as opposed to Otunga and Cody Rhodes. They came out to the Primetime Players theme, which is probably good for them. And again, the Primetime Players with AEW, Abraham Washington, they bailed in the middle of this match, so not a very competitive bunch. Not the first time we've seen them bail in the middle of a match, and a couple of other people actually walked out on Otunga as well. He ended up getting pinned by Santino in the Cobra, and then Brodus Clay showed up, and they did a whole bunch of dancing in the ring, and, you know, it was what it was. Alberto Del Rio had a match, or anyway, he was supposed to have a match, I should say, against Sin Cara, who was the hand-picked opponent for him by Teddy Long. And as soon as Sin Cara slid into the ring, he got a knee to the face, and basically Alberto Del Rio beat the living shit out of Sin Cara. So I'm not quite sure what this was about. You know, it seemed to me they were trying to build Sin Cara back up ever since he came back from his injury, and this is not a way to build somebody up. If you're going to use somebody to get their ass kicked to get somebody else over, I mean, that's fine. Why use Sin Cara, though? I really don't know. I was fearful on Twitter. I mentioned that when Teddy Long seems to have some sort of infatuation with the Great Khali, he loves putting Great Khali in matches. It's one of the reasons I hate Theodore Long. And so I figured, okay, he's going to introduce Khali as Del Rio's opponent. That didn't happen, which was good. Then I figured, well, maybe if it's not Khali, maybe it's Rey Mysterio. You know, Rey Mysterio is primed and ready to come back. His suspension is up. Of course, this was before I had heard the day after Raw that they are, in fact, holding off on Rey's return for the 1,000th Raw on July 23rd. It appears that Rey and Mark Henry, at least, and maybe a few other people even, will be making their returns to TV on that July 23rd show. So it wasn't Rey, it was Sin Cara. He got beaten down. Beaten down to the point where you thought maybe he was hurt again, or maybe he was suspended, and this was kind of a way to punish him. I haven't heard that that's the case. And in the case of Sin Cara, I could be wrong about this, but I believe he already has two strikes against him. Now, again, I could be wrong. Maybe it's only one. But if it is two strikes, a third strike would be termination. So I'm assuming that's not what happened here. Bunch of segments on the show involving AJ, and I don't need to go through all of them, so we'll just kind of skip over that here. Paul Heyman was on the show. As I predicted, Brock Lesnar was not going to be live in the arena. I at least thought Brock would be via satellite. They didn't even do that. They had Paul Heyman get mic'd up in studio, and he was via satellite from somewhere, probably the closet backstage. And basically, he announced that Brock Lesnar would make his decision on whether or not he would fight Triple H at SummerSlam on the July 23rd Raw, which makes total sense to me. I talked about it on the show this past weekend that if I were WWE, I would have Brock come out, and obviously he'll accept Triple H's challenge, perhaps with some caveats, but I would have Lesnar just destroy Shawn Michaels. You know, he may have to beat up Triple H, you know, just to get him out of the way, and then just do something absolutely heinous to his best friend to get over the fact that he's not fucking around. You know, Brock Lesnar means business, and he's going to hurt people that are close to Triple H, and I think that's the way to go. I don't know that they're going to do that, but obviously they're going to have him appear live on that show in a couple of weeks. So that's really all this was. Heyman didn't really have much else to say, although he did say that the match at SummerSlam, if there was in fact a match, it wouldn't be a match so much as it would be a mercy killing. And I am sticking to my guns that Triple H is going to win this match. He should. He absolutely should not win this match, but I am so jaded when it comes to the booking of Brock and some other people in WWE that I am convinced that Triple H is winning this match, so we'll see what happens. Sheamus was tag team partners on the show with AJ against Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero. I mentioned earlier that AJ actually got the win in this match. She pinned Vicky with what they called a Shining Wizard, which was basically just a knee to the head, and she went backstage all giddy to tell CM Punk, "Hey, did you see my match?" And he claimed he was on the phone with his sister. I don't know why. Perhaps he was on the phone with his sister because she was falling off the wagon. Perhaps his sister. I still think his sister is Claire Lynch from TNA. It would be kind of funny if CM Punk was having a phone call with Claire Lynch backstage and AJ found out about this and just showed up on Impact one week and just beat the hell out of Claire Lynch. I'm just saying that would be kind of funny. Heath Slater, another match on this show where he was to face a legend. This week it turned out to be Doink the Clown. Not the real Doink the Clown. Doink the Clown, the original, Matt Bourne, as a heel, was actually one of the better characters that WWE has had. But they had many iterations over the years of Doink and Steve Kern, the former Skinner, played Doink at one point, and Steve Lombardi has played Doink plenty of times over the years. Of course, he is the Brooklyn Brawler. He was Doink on this show. He got his ass beat. Heath Slater actually pinned Doink the Clown. And no sooner did he pin Doink than DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, for the first time, I think, in 10 years, makes his Raw return wearing what else? A DDP Yoga for Real Guys t-shirt. Well, I mean, it is his business now, so I guess he wants to get it over. And, you know, in fairness, a lot of wrestlers in WWE, and maybe even some in TNA, but I know there's a bunch of people in WWE, and Shawn Michaels was among them, Chris Jericho, and some others, actually do use DDP's yoga. So, anyway, he was there, and he was shaking hands with Heath Slater in the ring, and of course he ended up giving him an RKO, as many younger fans would call it. They're probably watching this wondering why this old man they don't know is using Randy Orton's move, but in fact, it's the other way around, and it was the diamond cutter that you could say Randy Orton stole from DDP. So a picture-perfect diamond cutter to Heath Slater, and that was it. One and done for DDP. He didn't really do much else, and that was it for him. Big Show and Kane had a no disqualification match on this show. It was brief. Big Show actually beat him clean in the middle of the ring, chokeslam on a chair. So that was that. Eve Torres made her first appearance on Raw in many weeks, back from filming a reality show, I believe, for NBC. And already the verbal abuse has started. You know, AJ was had a segment on the show later on with Eve where she mentioned the fact that Eve was doing, you know, she was busy doing reality shows and stuff. And you can just tell in the verbiage that this is already their way of kind of getting back at Eve. Eve was just viciously embarrassed on SmackDown, which is fine. I mean, her character is a heel. Teddy Long was in charge. I'm not saying the reason that she was embarrassed was, you know, strictly malicious. It makes sense for her character eventually to be brought back down to earth. But part of me just wonders, you know, she is doing other things. She did this reality show, I'm sure with WWE's permission, obviously. And we've seen other divas who kind of branch out and do reality shows and other TV shows. Stacey Keibler did it with Dancing with the Stars. And whether they get a big head or they just, you know, catch the eye of people in Hollywood and they get offers for other things, eventually they end up leaving on bad terms. And, you know, with Vince McMahon and WWE, if you don't stay within the bubble, they start to resent people for it. And I just wonder how much of the dialogue that was scripted on the show, mentioning the fact that Eve had been busy doing reality TV, had to do with any resentment on the part of some people backstage. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it. But she was back on the show. AJ was pouting in the hallway, and Eve came over to not really cheer her up so much as mock her. And AJ basically said, you know, Eve, you'll do anything for attention. I'll show you how to get attention. And that, of course, led to what happened at the end of the show. Tyson Kidd and Tensai had something. I can't really call it a match. I'm not really sure what it was. He just rolled up Tensai in 5 seconds and pinned him. And that was it. And after the match, Tensai beat up Sakamoto. And it wasn't until he started beating up Sakamoto after the match that I kind of stopped myself and I realized, wait a minute. Didn't he beat up Sakamoto before? Why is Sakamoto still managing him? Is he just his manservant who just takes the abuse? The problem is nobody gives a shit about either one of these guys, because neither one of these guys has yet to really cut up. I mean, they let Tensai cut one promo backstage on Raw like a month ago, and it was kind of a mixture of English and Japanese. Just let the fucking guy go out there and cut a real promo and tell us why he's back. Let Sakamoto say a few words too. We don't know anything about this guy, other than he looks like you know, the villain in every Jackie Chan movie, or the villain in that Lethal Weapon movie with Jet Li. That's the only thing we know about this guy. So until we know anything and we have a reason to care, nobody gives a fuck about either one of these guys. And, you know, this was just, this was atrocious. Nobody cared. Daniel Bryan and Chris Jericho had a segment backstage where they made fun of each other's jackets. It was what it was. Main event was CM Punk and John Cena against Daniel Bryan and Chris Jericho, which, this is the match that it picked up a lot at the end. And at one point, Jericho and Cena just brawl to the back, leaving Punk and Bryan. And by the way, how about CM Punk getting a main event on this show? And I know, you know, John Cena was also in the main event. That's the only reason he got it. But still, CM Punk actually in a main event on Raw. We should mark this date down on our calendars. So Jericho and Cena brawl to the back. That leaves Punk and Bryan. And when these guys get going, when they turn the jets on, these are two of the best wrestlers in all of WWE, probably in the entire world. I mean, these guys, they know how to work with each other. They're really, really good. And just as this was getting good, that's when AJ came out to kind of spoil the fun. And she dragged the table out from under the ring and set it up, climbed to the top, threatened to jump. And, of course, we all know what ended up happening. Punk tried to stop her. She kissed him, shoved him off the top rope into Bryan. Both guys went through the table. And the show ends with AJ on the top rope shouting, "Yes." And that was Raw on Monday night. Again, if you are a fan of AJ, you probably very much enjoyed this show. She was all over the show. She wrestled. She had about 4 backstage segments. She was in the main event. She ended the show. It's all AJ all the time. And eventually, if you know they aren't already, people are going to get sick of her. So if I'm WWE, I want to dial her act back a little bit. They got something with her. She's cute. I think she's very attractive. And she's got this act down where you really think there's something twisted and sick in her mind. There's like a screw loose up there, and she can just snap at any moment. You never know what she's going to do. And it's been a while since we've had a really compelling female character like that on WWE TV. I like it, but they need to dial it back a little bit, because you can, in fact, have too much of a good thing. And this is a good example of that. The next night, we had a live edition of SmackDown on Sci-Fi. This was the Great American Bash edition of SmackDown. I believe the first time they've dusted off the Great American Bash name and gimmick since the last pay-per-view, which I want to say was 2008, because I was at that show at the Nassau Coliseum. And I was actually very happy to say that I was at the last Great American Bash. And as far as I'm concerned, I still was at the last Great American Bash. This was not a real Great American Bash. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So I actually caught all of SmackDown this week. The main event was a 20-man over-the-top rope battle royal, with the winner becoming general manager next week. And it's still unclear to me if if the winner is to be GM of both Raw and SmackDown, or just SmackDown. I think the graphic at the end of the show said general manager of SmackDown. But that makes me wonder, because the gimmick of late has been each week, an ex-GM comes back to be the GM of both shows. And, of course, John Laurinaitis was the GM for both shows. So why would the winner of this Battle Royal only be GM for SmackDown? I'm not exactly sure what the deal is here. Let's just say that the winner of the Battle Royal will be the GM next week on both shows. And the winner of the Battle Royal was, in fact, Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder, who I met, actually, for the first time at the Be a Star Rally about a week and a half ago. Nice guy. Had the chance to talk to him briefly, and helped put together some media interviews for him to do. And it's funny because, you know, in the media interviews, people ask him all the same questions. You know, did you think that you would be able to get over? And did you ever think your YouTube show would become as popular as it did? And he tells the story of, you know, basically doing the show is a matter of either getting noticed or getting fired. He figured it would be one or the other. Either the show would help him get over or he would be fired. But he was tired of just spinning his wheels and not being used in WWE. And, of course, he got noticed. He had a bit of a push. He was the U.S. champion. And then things went all downhill. And of late, he has not even really made very many appearances on Raw, let alone SmackDown. And so he was in this battle royal. I'm sure most people didn't give it a second thought. And it actually came down to Zack Ryder and Kane. Now, Zack Ryder and Kane have had issues in the past. Kane put Zack Ryder in everything but a full body cast a couple months ago. It was almost comical how Zack Ryder would be killed a different way by Kane each week and just made to look like a complete fool. And Eve made fun of him all the time and gave him a low blow and cost him the match at WrestleMania and all that. And it was Zack and Kane, and with one pull of the top rope, Kane went flying out and Zack Ryder won the Battle Royal, and people went nuts. I think people went nuts, not just because they liked Zack, but because it was different. You know, you had a lot of big names in this Battle Royal. You had Big Show was in there, Kane, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, John Cena. And, it was kind of weird watching this thing because in some ways, for some reason, this Battle Royal reminded me of some of those Battle Royals that WWF would have in, like, the late 80s, early 90s. They had a couple of Battle Royals on TV. I think it was, like, Saturday Night's Main Event. And Hulk Hogan, who was the top star, probably the champion at the time, Hogan was in it, a lot of big names in it, but the big names would be eliminated, you know, in the middle of the Battle Royal. Hogan would get dumped out, people would get dumped out, and the winner would be either somebody you least expected or a mid-card guy. It wouldn't be a main event guy. And so just the way this was laid out, it kind of reminded me of that a little bit. And it was nice to see, SmackDown end with somebody like Zack Ryder standing tall. This is the second time this year that something like this has happened. Remember, there was a Battle Royal on SmackDown. I want to say it was in January, maybe February. It came down to Santino and David Otunga. That was when Santino won the big Battle Royal. Somebody got hurt. Maybe it was Randy Orton who got hurt. Couldn't appear in the Elimination Chamber. So SmackDown ended with Santino, of all people, winning the Battle Royal. So this was kind of the same thing here. Another mid-card act, that they haven't really been doing much with, which they weren't at that time anyway, with Santino. And Ryder gets the win, and he'll be the GM for at least SmackDown, if not both shows, next week. Ryder had a good night. They allowed him to get his revenge on Eve. There was a segment on the show. They were having this big Independence Day barbecue in the parking lot. And by the way, you have the Usos, you have Hornswoggle in this little pool, and Johnny Curtis and Derek Bateman, and this was some party that Teddy Long was throwing backstage. This was one of the lamest parties I've ever seen in my life. Oh my God, this was just awful. But we were supposed to think that they were having a blast. It was the coolest thing in the world. And anyway, Eve was there, and they were all mocking her, and all I could think of, by the way, when they were mocking Eve and bullying her was, be a star. But these people were being anything but stars to this poor girl. And Zach, I think Zach threw something at her food, or it accidentally hit Eve, and anyway, that was Zach's revenge, his accidental revenge on Eve. So in one fell swoop, after doing nothing with him for months, Zack Ryder got his revenge on Kane and Eve in this one show. So I say good for Zack. That was a fun way to end the show. Ryback had another squash on the show, although it was with one person instead of two. He actually faced Curt Hawkins and beat him in short order. So at least they're starting to feed Ryback some name people. I know, Curt Hawkins is not exactly a big name in WWE, but hey, at least he's got a name, and it's one person instead of two or three. We had Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Sergeant Slaughter in the spirit of Independence Day made an appearance. They teamed with Santino, and they beat Junico, Camacho, and Drew McIntyre. I felt really bad for Junico here. I really did become a fan of his after that YouTube video that WWE did, which, I talked about it already, but it's one of these profile pieces where you learn a little bit about the guy, you see him outside the ring, and Junico's a very likable guy, and he's a great wrestler. And just to see him stuck in this stupid, Vato gimmick, just like every other stereotypical gimmick they give these people, and to see him have to job to the Cobra, it just makes me shake my head. I wish they would do more with him, and he's far from the only person on the roster, but I felt bad for Junico here, because he deserves a lot better, I think. Michael Cole had an in-ring interview segment with AJ on the show, kept interrupting her, being a dick, which is what he does best. And this was an interesting segment because Daniel Bryan came out to interrupt, and then CM Punk came out to interrupt. And the segment ended with AJ planting a long kiss on Daniel Bryan. This was like the kiss she gave Kane many weeks ago, which dragged on forever and ever. This was like a 20 to 30 second long smooch, lips locked in the middle of the ring. And CM Punk actually seemed bothered by this. He seemed to be somewhat jealous of Daniel Bryan, which is kind of interesting, being that he's, been portraying it as though he doesn't really care about her. So I don't know if that was intended that way, or if that was just Punk's facial expression to indicate that, this girl is nuts and I'm getting out of here. I don't know. I read it as a little bit of jealousy on his part. And he left the ring. AJ saw this. She left the ring also to chase after Punk, spun him around, and then she proceeded to plant the same exact long kiss goodnight on Punk. And the only thing I could think of when she did this was, Punk is now getting Daniel Bryan's sloppy seconds. And I wonder if Punk actually can taste some of Daniel Bryan with this kiss. It was kind of nasty, actually. It's kind of an interesting question. I know a lot of people who listen to this show are kind of infatuated with AJ. I wouldn't say I'm infatuated, I would say that she's a cute girl, but, if that were you, if let's say the segment was you and your best friend, and AJ locked lips with your best friend for like 30 seconds straight, swap and spit the whole nine yards, and this, of course, broke your heart, you went to walk away, AJ comes after you, spins you around, would you like it if AJ actually kissed you at that point? I don't know. It's an interesting question. I guess it depends how desperate you are. If you're desperate for affection, I guess you'll take it. CM Punk didn't seem to mind. It's not like he shoved her away or anything. I thought it was kind of gross, but whatever. So I guess AJ is officially the new Hoski in WWE. We had two more Money in the Bank qualifiers on this show. Now, last weekend, I was going to say last week, but this past weekend of the show, I mentioned that I expected Cody Rhodes to still qualify for the Money in the Bank match, and that if Cody Rhodes did qualify, he would be my pick to win, unless Dolph Ziggler also qualified for the Money in the Bank. So, on this show, both Cody Rhodes and Dolph Ziggler qualified for Money in the Bank, and I'm sticking to my guns on this. I think either one could win, but I'm going with Dolph Ziggler in the Money in the Bank SmackDown match at the pay-per-view, because Dolph Ziggler has eaten about 89 brogue kicks, maybe. I've lost track. From Sheamus over the last couple of weeks. He just loses and loses and loses. And the most amazing thing about this is that the people still chant, "Let's go Ziggler," during his matches. Not everybody. But the guy is being jobbed out every week, and yet he still has the support of the fans. So hopefully they'll see this and start to change their ways here. But Cody beat Christian to qualify, and Dolph beat Alex Riley. And there you go. So the SmackDown Money in the Bank match, to me, more resembles what a Money in the Bank match should be. It's a collection of guys, young guys, mid-card guys, guys that have fallen on hard times in some cases, who are all fighting for the opportunity to be world champion when they likely would otherwise not get that chance. Although, again, Dolph Ziggler has had a couple of title matches, but you know, when was the last world title match that Cody Rhodes had? When was the last title match that Tensai had? Or Tyson Kidd, for that matter? That's what a Money in the Bank match, to me, should be. It shouldn't just be four former, you know, world champions who have all held the title probably a combined 40-something times. And I don't even think I'm really exaggerating when I say that. I mean, Cena's been, what, 10-time WWE champion? Big Show's had a couple of titles. Jericho, all right, maybe not 40, but I don't see any of those four guys, especially John Cena, needing the Money in the Bank briefcase to get a title shot. I just think it's a waste, but anyway, the SmackDown Money in the Bank field appears to be set. I don't know if they're going to have another qualifier next week, but there's already at least six guys in that match, unless they want to get eight. I guess we'll find out. There was a mixed tag match to open the show, actually, after the initial segment. First match, I should say. Layla and the Great Khali. And why not? Teddy Long's in charge, so of course Great Khali has to have a match. And they took on the tandem of Antonio Cesaro and Oksana. All I could think is, just poor Claudio. Things are going okay for him in WWE, and now he's got to try to do something with the Great Khali. And you know, he did what he could. It was brief. It's the best thing I could say about it. And Layla pinned Oksana with a neck breaker, and that was that. And I'm kind of going in reverse order here, in case you didn't notice. The show actually opened with a Del Rio segment where he basically ragged on the fans in Texas, called them a bunch of illegal immigrants, and went around ringside to check on their immigration papers. At one point, he was jaw-jacking with this guy in the aisleway, who apparently works for WWE. He's a WWE cameraman. Basically, this led to Sheamus coming out. They brawled, and Del Rio and Rodriguez, Ricardo. There you go, that's his name. Ricardo and Del Rio attacked Sheamus. They put his head under the hood of his car. Sheamus, I don't think Sheamus bladed. I think he probably just got cut accidentally, because when they came back from commercial, there was blood on his forehead, and they actually showed it, too. They didn't try to hide it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And that was it. That was SmackDown from Corpus Christi, Texas on Tuesday night, as they chug along to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view coming up on July 15th. Just a couple of other quick news bits here. The other big story over the last couple of days stems from a report that originated with Dave Meltzer. Meltzer, on a radio show of his, broke the news earlier this week that WWE had invited Bruno Sammartino to be inducted into the Hall of Fame next year, likely taking place in New York City. I had figured they would maybe do the Hall of Fame at Madison Square Garden. I still feel that they probably will do it at MSG, even though WrestleMania is in New Jersey. And anyway, so Meltzer mentioned that, and shortly thereafter, a representative of Bruno, Sal Corrente, who is now putting out statements on Bruno's behalf, had this to say. He said, "We understand that word is broken regarding the living legend Bruno Sammartino being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2013. Since word has broken publicly, I can confirm that we have been contacted and that I have been asked by Bruno to announce that he will not be inducted into the Hall of Fame next year. And actually, I think Corenti had to put out a subsequent announcement because there were other rumors that it was Triple H who made the call to Bruno, and Triple H's pitch wasn't exactly the best pitch to make. He was kind of pitching Bruno on the fact that, well, come on, you can come back and get one last big pop, and that's not a way to win over Bruno Sammartino's affection. It's not as though he really gives a shit about getting another big pop. I think he's very content with his body of work over the course of his career. But anyway, as it turns out, those reports apparently were erroneous. Triple H did reach out to Bruno, but Bruno himself, he actually did an interview with PW Insider. I listened to it. And Bruno had nothing but complimentary things to say about Triple H. This was the first time they really interacted. Obviously, Bruno has had dealings with his father-in-law, Vince McMahon, before, and they are not on the best of terms. But Bruno said that Triple H conducted himself very well and had not a bad word, not a cross word to say about the game, as far as him making that phone call and reaching out to him. And, you know, I get the sense from Bruno that he would potentially be open to doing something with WWE down the road. I wouldn't even rule out a Hall of Fame induction forever. I would say at some point, maybe when WWE has an actual Hall of Fame facility, if they start to treat it more like a legitimate Hall of Fame, that Bruno might come around at some point as he gets a little bit older. But, you know, that's one of the big reasons Bruno really doesn't have any interest in going into the Hall of Fame in the first place, is that Bruno has been inducted into a lot of different wrestling Hall of Fames. There's the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame up in Amsterdam, and I'm pretty sure he's been inducted at least into one other one. And these are, quote, legit Hall of Fames that have some sort of physical building or physical representation, and he's surrounded at these things by his peers, who are a lot of the older wrestlers from that period of the 60s and the 70s, a lot of whom are not around anymore, and they're dying out. They're a dying breed. And, you know, I never heard that Bruno had any sort of issue with the fact that they put celebrities in the Hall of Fame or anything like that. I know some people have had issues with that. Bob Backlund supposedly does. But, you know, Bruno, I have a lot of respect for Bruno. That's my thought on this, is that unlike most, he doesn't need the attention. He doesn't need the money. And he's sticking to his convictions. You know, even Bret Hart came around eventually. And I'm glad he did. But I respect Bruno for staying true to his word. If he doesn't want to go into the Hall of Fame, no matter what, if that's his view, and he, you know, then he's entitled to his view. And I'm sure it's would be tempting to most people if WWE came to you and said, listen, we want you to be the headline attraction. We want you to be the main event at Madison Square Garden for our Hall of Fame ceremony as part of WrestleMania weekend. Because you also get paid for it. It's not like you get paid a lot, although I guess, you know, everything is relative. $5,000. Last I heard, it was $5,000. $5,000 may be a lot to some retired wrestlers, and to most people, it wouldn't necessarily be a, you know, a decision maker, you know. But nonetheless, you get paid for it, you get a lot of attention, you get a nice little introduction video, you get to get up in front of a bunch of people who are showering you with applause, and I'm sure chants of thank you, Bruno, and, you know, I don't know if they get a cut of the DVD sales or anything like that, but yeah, I'm sure it would be very tempting for most people to do it. And Bruno just says, I don't need it. You know, I'm very happy with where I am. I have a lot of issues with Vince McMahon and how he's conducted himself and the views of where wrestling has gone in recent years compared to where it used to be. And again, much respect to Bruno. Whether I agree with him or not is irrelevant. He's sticking to his guns. He said he's not going in, and he's not going in. And he was very respectful of Triple H in this interview that I heard. And, you know, that's the deal with Bruno Sammartino. Now, the question becomes, if not Bruno, who is the headline attraction next year in New York for the WWE Hall of Fame? One name that comes to mind, obviously, I just had this conversation the other day with Noah Mark. We basically, as we usually do when we have phone conversations, me and Noah essentially had one of our shows, only we did it over the phone just with him and I. But we were talking about this subject, and I think he was the one who brought up the name Randy Savage. Now, Randy Savage would be a slam dunk. Obviously, it would make a lot of sense. As I explained to Noah, I think some of that bloom is off the rose because they waited so long, and Savage now, of course, is no longer with us, and it just would not be the same for Macho Man to go into the Hall of Fame without him being there to accept on his own behalf, which is not to say I don't think he deserves to be in. I want him to be inducted. I think at some point he will be, but I don't think you can do a Hall of Fame ceremony with the headline attraction being a dead wrestler. I think they want, and you need the person to be alive. You need them to be there to accept. That's why they want Bruno in, and if he says no, they're not going to put him in. Now, when he dies, I think they'll end up putting him in posthumously, whether he likes it or not, and I think they're well within their rights to do that. You know, they can respect his wishes, or they can put him in. He worked for their company. He accomplished a lot. He obviously doesn't want to be there to accept, and, you know, when he's dead, if WWE wants to put him in, I say put him in. But I don't think Savage is who they have in mind as far as a replacement main eventer. My thought was there's another person who Vince McMahon has had issues with before, very well-known, well-publicized issues, somebody else who has not really made an appearance in many, many, many years in a WWE ring, in fact, probably not since 1996. And that, of course, is the Ultimate Warrior. The Ultimate Warrior has been approached in the past about a Hall of Fame induction, has been open to the idea of a Hall of Fame induction, and for one reason or another, it never worked out. It fell apart, whether it was money or whatever the case may be. And I think Warrior is, if he hasn't already, probably going to be getting a phone call from WWE. I don't know that phone call will come from Triple H, whom he squashed at WrestleMania 12. But whoever that phone call comes from, I would expect that Warrior would get the call, and it could very well be Warrior going into the Hall of Fame next year. I would think he probably is the leading candidate now if Bruno's not going in, and Savage, even if he goes in, is not going to headline. You can't headline with a dead guy, I'm sorry. So I guess we'll see what happens. We still have a long-ass time before the Hall of Fame comes up, but if I'm Warrior, I'm expecting a call from Connecticut one of these days, so we'll see what happens. The other story I want to just touch on really briefly here is WWE released somebody this week who I wasn't even aware of still worked for the company. Armando Estrada received his WWE release this week. He had been re-signed to the company about 18 months ago, very quietly, and I have no recollection of them doing anything with him on TV. They may have. As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, he may have actually been... I think they did something with him and Tyson Kidd. Like, he was a manager for Tyson. I think Tyson Kidd went through this period where he had, like, a different manager each week. One week it was Michael Hayes, and Armando Estrada might have been a manager for him one week on either Raw or Superstars, whatever it was. That may have been the only thing they did with Armando the entire time. I mean, this is like classic WCW here, where they would sign people to contracts. Although, you know, WCW would sign somebody like the genius, Lanny Poffo, to a six-figure contract and then never would even fly him to any of the events. I doubt that Armando had a six-figure deal from WWE, but whatever the deal was, they certainly didn't make use of it, and then they decided they didn't have anything for him, and they cut him. So he is gone. Not a bad way to make a paycheck if you can get that kind of work, just by sitting at home and doing nothing. Here's another guy who had personality, had charisma. I never really looked at him as anything special as a wrestler when he wrestled on ECW, but as a manager, I thought he was great. And you know me, I love managers, I think we need more of them. And I don't just mean female valets, I mean real managers. I'm not necessarily a fan of AW's act, but I like the fact that AW is a manager, and he's got, you know, they won't call him a manager, they refer to him as an agent or something like that, because apparently the word manager is a dirty word in WWE, but fuck it, he's a manager. And they could have done something with Armando, and they didn't. And so another talented guy gets his release. I don't know where he'll end up. You know, TNA, I guess, could use him in the same role. I just, as a wrestler, not that he's a bad wrestler, but I just, you know, he doesn't do anything for me. I think you need to accentuate his strengths, which is he can be somebody's mouthpiece. So hopefully he lands on his feet. Maybe in ROH, maybe Ring of Honor can find something for him. So anyway, that's the deal with Estrada. I was a bit stunned when I heard that he was released, because my first reaction was I didn't even know he was signed. Got a quick shout out here. David Bantz from Monroe, Wisconsin wrote into me. He says, I'd like to get a shout out for my girlfriend Bonita. We've been together for nearly a year, and she tries so hard to enjoy watching WWE with me, though it's usually just her commenting on how stupid Raw is every week. I try to defend it, but well, she's right. She does, for some reason, have a strange obsession with Alberto Del Rio and says that he's awesome. Even though she's wrong, I still love her. Her birthday is on July 8th, and it would be pretty awesome if you can get a shout-out on the air for her. So happy birthday to Bonita. I don't think David expected me to be able to do this show before her birthday, So this might come as a bit of a surprise to him that this shout-out is coming early. So happy birthday to her. And if you have shout-outs and questions for our weekly mailbag, you can email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. I'm not going to get into it now. This is an abbreviated special edition of the Sound Off. I'm not going to do mailbag questions on this show. We'll get back to that next week. But if you have questions, email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter. @solemonster is my handle. I am headed to Las Vegas at the end of this week. I'll be flying down there. Well, I guess not down there. I'll be flying over to Vegas on Friday. And I'll actually be back here in New York late on Tuesday. So I may be tweeting from Vegas, which could be very good or very bad. I don't know yet. But follow me on there, @solemonster. Friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolemonster, all one word. And subscribe to the show in iTunes. I understand there was some difficulty for some people in streaming the show and getting the show in iTunes earlier this week, episode 225. That was, of course, because Podbean went down. Podbean's been pretty good. They've been behaving lately, but unfortunately they went down again for a while there for a good day or two, and I believe it's back up now. So anytime you have issues like that, just assume that Podbean is down, and it sometimes can take them the entire day to get their shit together. So I try to get the show up on an alternate server, and when that happens, I suggest that you check with me and then try refreshing the link on SEScoops.com, because whenever that happens, I just swap out the link for a working one and just refresh the page and it should work. iTunes, unfortunately, which is great, I am a slave to Podbean when it comes to iTunes, so you just got to wait until it gets back up and running. But hopefully everything is okay now, and if you're listening to 226, then I guess everything is okay. So subscribe to the show on iTunes and it will be automatically downloaded for you. And I am still hoping to get a vintage sound off up on YouTube as well in the next day or two. So if I do, subscribe to my YouTube channel. The username on there is TheSolemonster, all one word. And I think that about hits all the possible ways that you can get in touch with me and keep in touch with the show. So I appreciate your support. By the way, we also have a fan page on Facebook as well, separate from the profile page. And I don't really publicize it too much, but if you go on that page and can like the page, we're getting very close to 500 likes, so I want to get up above 500. So if you would be so kind as to do that, I would very much appreciate that. So that's going to do it for the special July 4th edition of the Sound Off as we celebrate America's birthday. 236 years old this country is today. Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair catching up pretty quickly to America. They're not quite there yet, but they're getting pretty close. 236 years. It's pretty impressive. But I'm sure if WWE had something to say about it, they would come up with some sort of did-you-know fact about how much more impressive it is that Raw has 1,000 episodes coming up. That's it for episode 226. Thank you all for listening. Have a very happy holiday. Again, I will be away this weekend, so there will be no new show until next weekend. That will be episode 227, so just hold out until then. I am planning a special feature either for that show or the show after. Whatever the show is before the 1,000th Raw, I am planning a little countdown. I'll tell you more about it on the next show. So until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here very soon. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.